The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. This week, we speak to Adrian Sherwood about 30 years of the On You Sound label. We'll be talking about tracks from Nazca Line's Sunless 97 and DJO, and Pete Perfidis tells you everything you need to know about folk music in the latest of our ongoing series. That's all in this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello to you. Hello also to long-term friend of the pod, Ben Beaumont-Thomas.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very good, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And new recruit, Kim Taylor-Bennett.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in, both of you. We're going to start with three new tracks that we've put up for review. The first one up for discussion is Ben's Choice. That's DJ Earl, striking a blow for progressive feminism there, on Hit the Boots. Ben, this is from an album coming out on Planet Moo, Bangs and Works Volume 2, The Best of Chicago Footwork. I'm aware of Bangs and Works Volume 1. Tell me why you brought this in.
Well, I just got back from a festival called Unsound in Poland, which was phenomenal, and I was dancing to the sounds of Footwork, which you just heard.
Were you doing the actual dancing?
Well,
amazing.
Yes, I was apparently channeling a Camp Michael Flatley, was how it was
wow.
Described.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, it's incredibly fast music out of Chicago, sort of 160, 170 BPM stuff that takes these samples from lots of well-known tracks, like the tracks that Spin and Richard, who we saw in Poland, were playing, with stuff like Get Down by Paul Johnson and Show Me Love by Robin S, and loads of pop rap hits basically cut up and then just intensely compressed and play with this hugely fast BPM. And I'd heard Bangs and Works 1. I'd never heard it in a kind of live context, and I always thought it was a little bit rigid and difficult to really comprehend as a dancing music.
Well, as anything really. I mean, you could see why on a sort of theoretical level it appeals to the people who run Planet Mew or whatever, you know, as a sort of abstract form of electronica or whatever. But yeah, it did strike me as a little of it went quite a long way, was what I thought.
But then we were dancing to this stuff for like 2.5 hours, and it was like, I was saying to Kim before, it was a bit like a spinning class. It was the incredibly intense, sweat pouring off me, looking like a Camp Michael Flatley. DJ Richard was filming it, just looking as if he was quite amused by the sight of all these skinny white English boys attempting to do this extremely fast Chicago style of dancing. But yeah, I absolutely loved it, and it completely synthesized the music and made me understand it far more. And I think the dance floor is its kind of place that it most sort of accurately exists, I guess.
Kim, are you a fan of Footwork? Were you aware of Footwork before? Has this changed your mind, or simply, what's the phrase? What's the word I'm looking for? Change your mind. What's the opposite of changing your mind?
Solidified.
Augmented.
Augmented.
Augmented your previous thoughts on this genre.
I was not aware, no, but I do find this track, you know, alternately funny and awful, and sort of does make me want to shake my ass. So,
wow.
You know,
wow.
It's kind of, I'm a bit disgusted by what he's saying, but I think it's pretty funny as well. It's, you know, an old sample from the 90s.
Yeah.
Some.
I think it's like a 3-6 Mafia tune or something
like
that. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, check out the rest of Bangs. That's kind of maybe slightly unrepresentative of the new Bangs and Works, because it's got most recognisable vocal hook in it. There's some of it is just completely psychedelic and crazy, like samples from The Wiz that have just been boiled down to a single second.
The musical,
yeah,
Witch.
The musical, The Wiz, stuff that sounds like Skritti Politti played backwards, just really, wow. really crazy stuff.
That
yeah.
sounds genuinely fascinating. I'm not sure, you know, I'm as I often say on this program, I'm a very old man indeed, and I don't think anybody wants to see me dancing to footwork. So I would maintain a decorous distance from the dance floor at all times.
I should have done.
Unless they put Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, in which case I'm there. So that's out on the 7th of November on Planet Mew. The album from which it is taken, Bangs and Works Volume 2, The Best of Chicago Footwork. Okay, next up, my choice. That's Sunless 97 with Illuminations. My choice this week. I don't really know a great deal about Sunless 97 or indeed Illuminations. I know they're a London-based band, big on the blogs, I'm led to believe. And this was just in a pile of stuff on my desk, singles to be listened to. And I think from the name I sort of thought, oh, it's going to be more kind of post-shoegazing, which I suppose it is to a degree, but it was less so than I thought it was going to be, and I just thought it was a good song. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? Good songs. I have nothing more to say about it other than it seems like quite a good record. That's what made me Britain's top rock critic. So, yes, Kim, what did you... Did you like that? Did you not dislike it? Tell us all.
I do like it. I like it a lot. It kind of is quite reminiscent of a lot of stuff going on at the moment. Mm. This sort of hazy Polaroid pop, you know, very cults-like.
Hipstomatic pop.
Hipstomatic pop, exactly. But I really rate Abino as a blog and as an outlet.
So this comes from a blog, does it?
Well, this is... Abino is like an offshoot of XL or something like that.
Right.
And it's also a new music blog.
Wow, amazing. What will they think of next?
So yeah, this is coming out on that label and I trust their taste. But I do feel like there's a lot of bands like this at the moment.
Sure,
But, you know, it makes me think of summer, which is nice when it's so moist outside.
Yeah, it is a bit damp. Ben, did it make you think of summer?
It did. It made me think of the rather more kind of bland parts of summer, I thought. I like the sunlit, hazy vibes.
Mm.
But there's a real kind of fine line between creating something that signifies blissfulness with, mm-hmm. you know, chucking loads of reverb and delay and echo and everything, and actually using the things that are really blissful, like melody and syncopation and all these things. And I feel that it veers far too much towards the telling you that it's being blissful without just it naturally feeling that way.
So more of a generic...
It is, deeply thing. So, I think.
Okay, well, there you go. That's Illuminations by Sunless 97 from the Making Waves EP on Abino Music, which is out on November the 21st. Our last track is Kim's Choice. Smooth music there for you on the Guardian Music Weekly podcast. That's NZCA. NZCA?
It's Nazca Lines.
Nazca Lines, okay. That track is called Okinawa Channels, and that is apparently the first time that track has been played in public anywhere. Is that right?
That is a worldwide exclusive for
wow.
you guys.
Kim, you brought that in. Tell us all about it, please.
So Okinawa Channels, that will be the second single from Nazca Lines, and that's basically the brainchild of Michael Lovett, who was the bassist in Your 20s, you may know from that song Caught Wheel a couple years ago, who was fronted by the bassist of Metronomy.
Okay.
So it's all kind
okay.
of in that family. And basically, he just created this incredible album in his bedroom. And I think it's really the antithesis of this sort of Polaroid pop. It's super, super clean, you know, incredible analog synths, like beautiful harmonies that he's just done all himself. And, you know, really, he's really thought about the lyrics as well. Every single track on the album has some weird sci-fi story, whether it's, you know, about cryogenics or a man who falls in love with his spaceship. In this case, it's about, you know, people getting these weird signals through their TVs and their radios, and it's sending them a bit cuckoo. So I love a bit of geeky story behind a song, and I just think this guy is fantastic.
I liked it enormously. It made me think of the 1980s, and it made me think of that period around 1984 or 83, 84, where a few pop artists started to branch out into slightly more progressive, what I would sort of dub prog pop areas. I'm thinking a bit of, although it doesn't really sound on one level at all like any, I think things like Brilliant Trees by David Sylvian and stuff like that. It seems to me to be pop music, Blue Nile, seems to me to be pop music, 80s-style pop music with a slightly wider frame of reference or wider ambition about it. Ben?
Yeah, I've heard he's mentioned Aaliyah as a defining influence.
Didn't
I think that's almost
like
becoming a bit of a cliche almost to sort of cite Aaliyah as someone, and Try Again in particular, the song, as being influential. And I think he's definitely not got the sense of space that Timbaland conjures up. But I do really, really like it a lot. I think the Okinawa channels as a phrase is this really nice, chewy, earwormy phrase that I have no idea where Okinawa channels are or the significance thereof. But it really gets into your brain, and really in a really compelling way.
Where can people hear this now if they want to? It's not out until after Christmas, is it?
Yeah, this is it.
That's
I got
it.
So excited that I was just like, I have to
write Where did you
it.
Where did you hear it?
Well, I just I've just been following his kind of musical trajectory, and so recently I interviewed him for the Fader magazine, which I write for in the States.
Okay.
And it's coming out next year. There should be some stuff online, you know, in the coming months, but this is only going to be his second single. He's only played live twice.
Wow.
So this is really early days, but it is an incredibly polished collection of songs, and it's awesome.
That's Nazca Lines, spelled NZCA /lines. Some thoughts on the blog. On last week's programme, we chose two of Martin Young's favourite tracks last week, 254 for the brooding, sexy and captivating rock sound. And fanzines, I don't know why I'm laughing at that, I don't know why I think that's funny. And fanzine for making a gloriously catchy and melodic pop single. However, Pop Bijou posted, anyway, indifferent to the 254 and fanzine singles, I'm not inclined to investigate. The 254 leaves the sour taste of late 90s alternative rock in my mouth. Ouch! Hated that period in music. Me too. But he just loved the lad Willie Moon. It's strange that there is so little space or interest really in male acts that aren't either urban or bearded. Have a great week, everyone. Taking it onto a look at Avant Rock and Electronica, Sol said, nice feature, but the term electronica really makes my shit itch. Come on, did you have to talk like that? What a revolting expression that is. Bloody Americanism. Remember when it was just called dance music? I think there's a differentiation to be made between electronica and dance music, isn't
yeah,
there?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think of it as
Americans used to. I found it really bizarre when I went on holiday when I was 15 to America, and they were calling stuff like the Chemical Brothers electronica and like dance music, and it was just a sign that UK music in the UK that was so huge, all this chart dance had become this really niche, weird thing over there that was dubbed electronica, in the same way that like Alva Noto or
Oval or somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
something glitchy.
Electronica.
Yeah.
Or that record that Mike Paradine has made with the Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
That's dreadful. But anyway, I mean, you know, anyway. But I take Saul's point. I mean, I don't take Saul's point. Anyway, whatever. If you agree or disagree with this week's reviews, or even if you just want to tell us about your shit itching, leave a comment on the blog. We'd like your help. If you fancy coming on the programme in future and being one of the people on our review panel, then drop us a tweet at Music Weekly Pod with a link to the track you would pick if you came on. We could start this next week. Maybe we'll start this next week. Maybe we won't. Include the hashtag, everyone is on half term. Best not to post your interest on the blogs. It's quite complicated for us to get in touch with you through the blogs. Send us a tweet instead, much easier. We'll be back in touch if we need you. Adrian Sherwood, producer, DJ, latterly artist in his own right, has piloted the On You Sound label for 30 years, spewing forth an eclectic mix of music. Its roots are in reggae, but it's gone on to release blues, folk, funk, and music that you could only really classify as unclassifiable. The 30th birthday has been celebrated with an event at Rough Trade. There's lots of new releases. There's lots of reissues coming out. We met earlier today, and I asked him about the history of one of Britain's most iconic labels. What made you start the label in the first place?
On You wasn't actually my first label. I'd been a junior partner in a reggae label called Carib Gems, where I was, as a 17-year-old, selecting what became like the first Black Uhuru, Prince Fireye, some wonderful, wonderful releases. After that, I found myself in debt at the age of 19. I started Hit Run, which is another reggae label, where I was licensing tape. During the Hit Run period, I'd produced my first couple of albums. I was produced in inverted commas, you know. I'd hummed the bass lines to the bass player, financed the session, and I had like the great Dennis Bavell mix it for me. And then I started developing as a producer. And by the time it reached end of 1980, I'd recorded what became the first New Age Steppers album, having toured with the Slits, and that became the foundation for the formation of On You Sound. We just fumbled on from where we were in our lives to starting this new label to try and survive and obviously do what we wanted to do, which was make music.
It seems very much a product of the post-punk era in the sense of, A, it's music made with no restrictions and the brakes are off and sort of generic boundaries aren't really involved in it. And also because of the fact that when you look at it, a lot of the musicians that are involved with On You Sound, although it's thought of as a reggae label, weren't actually reggae musicians at all.
Well, I don't think we are a reggae label, but its foundation was definitely based in reggae, because that's where I came from, Jamaican music. But if you look through it, we've done everything like Ian King's folk album, you know, Panic Grass and Feverfew, to blues, to funk, to noise music. We didn't want to stay on the same page. I think with On You, it's very, very reflective of Black Britain, of mixed-race Britain. We had the players from the real authentic ones from each background playing on the same records. That's why the records sound good.
Right from the start, On You starts pushing at the boundaries of reggae. I mean, if you listen to those, you know, African Head Charge is obviously coming at dub from a completely different angle, really, than anything that had come before. I mean, this sort of notion of psychedelic dub, this notion of this really heavy... I mean, obviously, the drumming is you know, based in sort of Rastafarian drumming and that kind of thing. Where did the sort of inspiration for that come from?
I've been party to lots of conversations about Garveyism, the Rasta movement, the Back to Africa movement, and I found it very interesting, the fact that there weren't lots more African flavours in Jamaican music. Now, there are very much so with the Funde, the Naya Bingi, the Heartbeat, and obviously some of the kettle drums and whatever. But I decided I wanted to try, because I was working with Bonjo, who'd been in African Head Charge as a percussionist. I decided to use his percussion playing and a lot of experimental ideas to try and make something that just... I didn't want it to sound like anything else, to be honest. And I was following an idea in my head based on a quote Brian Eno said about, I had a vision of a psychedelic Africa. And I thought, oh, what an idiot, when I heard it. But then afterwards I thought, oh, no, hang on a minute, that's actually really, really, really interesting. You know, the idea of tripping out the kind of African stuff. And to this day, I mean, apart from probably Deep Forest, who did it as a kind of corny disco thing, you still haven't really heard the potential of, like, those brilliant guitars or drumming all kind of processed up and turned inside out for the Smokey Bear people, you know.
How did you come to work with Lee Scratch Perry?
He came to England and he and I met up in a studio where he arrived with some tapes and they were kind of like Bob Marley cover versions. I said, well, hang on a minute, Lee, let me put these on. And I put some things that Style Scott had cut in Jamaica and I'd cut in England with Style drumming, and I'd been processing up using phases and things not dissimilar to Lee, and he started voicing what took the best part of a year to make, which was Time Boom.
Was he an easy guy to work with? I mean, you must have been slightly trepidatious about working with him, A, because he's such a legendary figure, and B, because he has a reputation that goes with that.
If you see Lee Perry now, he's like really spiritual. He doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, completely vegetarian, and he's fit as anything. At that time, Lee was drinking, getting mashed up on whatever, and I don't think he was that happy inside himself. But so I was taking hold of actually the engineering and the thing, but I was not going to accept anything because I knew we were getting some, as he put it himself, magic stuff done. So I think when I worked with him, I loved it because it was completely lifting me up. I'd keep pushing him, he'd keep coming up with mad ideas, we'd enlarge the idea, we'd go away a few days, get back again, and we didn't rush to just do any old thing. And I think he respected the fact that I was looking to get, you know, a kind of really special bit of work done as well. And I think it's still, apart from the fact it's got electronic drums played on it, you know, those Simmons drums, yeah, which I wish I'd stuck to my guns, but it still sounds great, I think, 26 years on, however long it is.
Was the thinking behind the Barmy Army Am, which is, for the benefit of anybody who doesn't know it, is kind of, it's an album about football. It's an album of kind of cut up stuff about football.
Well, similarly, I applied the same thing. We were living right next to West Ham Football Ground. We could literally watch a game and then be back before final score came up on the TV. And in those days, football was almost like a social leper, you know, much as reggae had been at one stage. It was, you know, always sold in the cheap racks. And I worked with Al Jorgensen for Ministry doing a record, and I made a track with Al where I took samples of football records, like of the Cop singing and commentary, and made a song called Sharp as a Needle, more for fun than anything, because we've been going to football with these like huge sonics of, you know, 10,000 people singing Abide With Me and stuff like that. And I made the Sharp as a Needle, and John Peel made it his record of the year because he was a Liverpool fan. I'd done recordings on a cassette off at the football grounds, and I started putting them on dub and funk rhythms and evolved the Barmy Army before it was nicked by the cricket fans.
...30 years is a long time for an independent label to keep going under any circumstances, particularly under current circumstances when, you know, industry's meant to be going down the toilet and all that kind of thing. What's the secret? What's kept you going?
We've been extinct almost a couple of times. It's very hard to keep any number of staff together. So I've only managed to keep the imprint together by producing it myself, keeping the costs down and not having... if I'd had hits, what tends to happen is a record company has a hit. They then have to get more staff on to try and maintain it. They then go for a real upsurge, doing really well. Then it all collapses. The only reason I'm still trading with that brand and that name after 30 years is because I did not have, you know, the highest number of staff we ever had was 9, and that was including studio staff and other activities we were doing. And that all went wrong, and I nearly went bankrupt. You know, I had to sell everything I had to pay off my debts, including my house, everything. So I have been there, and right near the edge of having, you know, a disaster. Mm-hmm. I'm only here because we did not get that big, and we did, so the crash can't be as big as the rise.
So your advice to any aspiring record label is try not to have any hits.
Hover in obscurity, but make enough to enjoy yourself.
Adrian Sherwood there, and there's an On You Sound limited release of the first ever single to come out on the label, Fade Away by New Age Steppers. Search that one out. Also, there's a fascinating sounding Lee Scratch Perry album coming out, or indeed may actually be out. I think it's about to come out on New Sound, which has got Code 9 and people like that reworking tracks that Lee Perry did with Adrian Sherwood in the 80s. So that should be an intriguing thing as well. Coming next, your guide to folk.
My name is Pete Pavides. I am a recovering folk fan. Like many music fans of my generation, exposure to the Wicker Man at a crucial age, combined with formative memories of Pentangle's Light Flight and Tony Arthur swooshing her caftan, singing on Playaway has left me just a touch vulnerable to the allure of folk music. Of course, in some circles, to even say that you like folk music is to thrust yourself unwittingly into a conversation about what even constitutes folk. I'd like to think we've loosened up just a little bit since the days when Bert Jansch turned up to Ewan McColl's Singers Club and was virtually stared out of the room for having the temerity to play A, guitar. Ewan mistrusted the newfangledness of guitars, and B, he played Davy Graham's Not Handed Down Through Generations instrumental, Angie. Bert, of course, died earlier this month after a long illness, and right as it was to see a tidal wave of adoration for his music, I also just felt a little bit like alerting people to the fact that Bert wasn't the only guitarist who played in Pentangle. Furthermore, the other one, John Renbourn, remains one of the most singularly compelling guitar stylists you can see. You still can and ought to see him while you get the chance. John released his first studio album for 13 years this year. Palermo Snow it was called. And I just love the way John's broken down elements of seemingly disparate styles from early music to bebop and somehow reconfigured them in his own image. If you listen on Palermo Snow to what he does to Randy Weston's Little Niles, he's amazing. I think to get the full measure of John's brilliance and also to see just how much he looks like Santa Claus these days, I would totally recommend seeing him live. He's announced a few dates in April with another absolute legend, Robin Williamson, formerly of the Incredible String Band, and on the London show at the Union Chapel, they will also be joined by another criminally underrated guitar stylist, Wiz Jones. I think we're finding that, certainly in British folk, there's an unsentimentality, a rawness coming through in the vocal stylings of the best younger singers. The Unthanks, Emily Portman spring to mind. I've been banging the drum for years for people like James Yorkston, amazing songwriter, and Alistair Roberts too, for a good 10 years now.
So they walked and they talked till they came to a lake, and the first man met was a keeper of game, saying, "Go back, fine fellows, do not venture in, for it's deep and dark waters in the lakes of Shillin."
Alistair sings in a manner that's slightly reminiscent of, in part, of John Laurie from Dad's Army, and partly redolent of an 18th century smallholder who has just emerged from his hut to realise that his entire turnip yield has been affected by the blight. If you're listening to this on Friday, Alistair's playing tonight at Glasgow Centre for Contemporary Art, and in December also in Sheffield and in London. I love Alistair so much that he was responsible for one of my few disastrous forays as a concert promoter. I got him to play a show at Cecil Sharp House in London, home of folk, of course, which I guess would have made money had I not decided to press up a small run of CDs featuring four songs that were very kindly, exclusively donated to me by Alistair. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the cost of the CD effectively wiped out any profits accrued. That said, I gather they've become rather sought after in the interim, so I have brought my remaining 10 copies in. First people to contact me on Twitter asking me for a copy of You Need Not Braid Your Hair For Me, I Have Not Come A-Wooing can have a copy. You can find my details on the Guardian Music Weebly page. Another great folk stylist who sadly died this year was Mike Waterson. Mike's influence, both with the Watersons and through Bright Phoebus, the stunning 1972 album he made with his sister Lal Waterson, seems to intensify with each passing year. You can certainly hear it in The Old Songs, which is the wonderful new album by Damien Barber and Mike Wilson. This is their second album together. Prior to that, Damien was in the Demon Barbers from Norfolk. Mike sang with the Wilson family in Teesside. Let's have a bit of The Brisk Lad. This is just lovely.
Well, last Saturday night I went out for a stroll after rocking me babies to sleep. And at the bottom of our street, why, who do you think I met? But me wife, and with a soldier 6 feet. Well, she sobbed and she sighed, boy, she damn nearly died. She said, lad, I've been thinking of thee. But with the fire burning bright, I could sit half the night rocking me babies to sleep, and it's lady lay.
Once again, I would guess there are some people who might balk at the idea of the next selection being folk music. Mike Scott and the Waterboys dramatically embraced, well, aspects of folk on Fisherman's Blues in 1988. One of my favourite albums of all time, Fisherman's Blues. That was also the album which featured The Stolen Child, which, of course, formalised the beginning of Mike Scott's musical love affair with W.B. Yeats. The Waterboys' new album, An Appointment with Mr. Yeats, is the logical conclusion of that love affair. It's easily the best thing they've done in 20 years, I think. A total, total return to form. This is Mad as the Mist and Snow.
What makes me sigh? What makes me shudder so? I shudder and I sigh to think that even Cicero and many-minded Homer were mad.
I saw them play the whole album, actually, almost a year before it came out at the Barbican. It was such an arrogant thing to do, actually, to play an album entirely, an entire album of unreleased music. But from the very beginning, the band seemed to be just mainlining this almost supernatural energy. Tickets for the Waterboys' forthcoming tour went on sale this week. I absolutely urge you to go and see them. It was just a phenomenal night, that night at the Barbican, and they're just absolutely on fire at the moment.
That's friend of the podcast, and indeed personal friend of mine, Pete Perfidis, with his Guide to Folk. That wraps it up for the programme today. My thanks to Ben Beaumont-Thomas.
Thank you.
Oh, well, it says here, I'm going to do this differently. It says my thanks to BBT.
Oh, thank you.
And KTB. Excellent.
Hello. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
That's an expression that says you're never coming back. You're wearing an expression, my God, what are you talking about? I will never darken this rotten podcast again. Well, I'll be back next week. Don't forget to drop us a tweet if you're interested in joining in. Till then, thanks for listening. I'm Alexis Petridis. The programme was produced, as ever, by Scott Cawley.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.